Hey, you're listening to the Back-to-Back podcast from Fault Radio, the show where we sit down back-to-back with the producers and labels that are getting us excited. I'm your host, Brendan Coe, editor for Fault Radio, and today, my guest is San Francisco-based producer Brett Henderson, better known as Computer Data. He's a maestro of the lo-fi house sound with a penchant for deep pads and sonic textures that have a way of making you feel nostalgic for something you've never known. His tracks have amassed millions of plays across YouTube and SoundCloud, and his success has even followed him into DJing, where he's appeared on lineups with the likes of DJ Seinfeld, Baltra, Chaos in the CBD, Purple Disco Machine, and more. Not a bad list to be a part of. His most recent releases include three EPs out on London-based label Shall Not Fade and its sub-label Lost Palms. In these EPs, we hear a new sound from Computer Data, one that moves away from internet lo-fi and towards left-field club anthems. When I caught up with Brett late in 2020, we got a lovely chance to talk about all these things as well as some more personal stories. I can't wait to get into it. So stay tuned. Make sure to follow Fault Radio if you're not already on Instagram at @its_fault_radio and across all our platforms on YouTube, SoundCloud, wherever you're listening to your podcast. Thanks. Stay tuned. Computer Data, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So right off the bat, I'm saying Computer Data, but I've heard you say Computer Data. What's the right way to say it?
I don't really care. I don't have a preference. You can say it either way.
Whatever way it rolls off the tongue, the most natural, I guess.
Yeah.
So now that we have that out of the way, how are you? We're in the pandemic post-national election. How are things for you?
It's been a stressful week or so, I guess, now on top of everything that's been going on this year. But this whole election thing is pretty stressful to deal with. I guess besides that, it's cooled off a little bit in the Bay Area. Finally, I'm feeling a little bit better, getting some of my inspiration back. So
yeah, you're posted up in Oakland now, but you miss the weather in San Francisco, the chilly weather, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm moving back at the end of the year. It's way too hot over here.
Are you kind of inspired by the colder weather? Is that why you like it?
I think, well, a couple of reasons. I think yes. Like, I think my brain just also works better when I'm not overloaded from heat. I don't tolerate heat very much. And colder environments definitely just a lot more comforting to me.
It must get hot in your room where you produce with all those analog synths.
Yeah. You have no idea. So I guess I moved into this place in January at the start of the year. And we had no idea it was going to be so hot in here. It's a relatively new building. And the windows let in so much heat. There's no insulation really in here. Mm-hmm. So it's been about over 80 degrees in this room for the last, what month is it? November, I guess. Pretty much for 11 months, it's been almost above 80 degrees in here, and it's been unbearable. And with the gear on, it's another 10 degrees. So
yeah. And classic Bay Area, houses and apartments, the older ones, no air conditioning.
No AC. Yeah.
Yeah. So what are you looking, forward to moving back to San Francisco and the gloomy summer weather? Does that actually appeal to you?
Yeah, it absolutely does. And I really am looking forward. I used to live in the Inner Richmond, which is foggy, super foggy, all summer long. And I really missed that a lot. And now that rent's cheaper too, so.
Yeah, that's a big plus. Where do you think you're going to move back to in San Francisco, or where do you want to move back to?
I am looking for places in the Inner Richmond, Outer Sunset, Outer Richmond area, somewhere near the park again.
Yeah, that's nice. So before, when you were living in San Francisco, you were going to school at the University of San Francisco?
Yeah, that's correct.
What were you studying there?
Computer science.
Computer science for Computer Data?
Yeah.
I know that you must have graduated by now.
Yeah.
So congratulations on that. But instead of jumping into the workforce, you took the step to pursue music and DJing full time, right?
Correct. Yeah.
And then the pandemic hit. So how are you feeling now?
Yeah. I mean, I'd be lying if I said I didn't regret my decision at least a little bit this year, because especially living in the US with the financial support and everything. It's been tough this year. It's been really tough. I don't know. I'm having a hard time this year, but I think I finally kind of figured it out. It's a little bit towards the end of the year, but, you know, moving forward.
Well, that's good to hear. And I don't think anybody could really blame you for taking that step, because you were having a huge wave of momentum before everything hit the pandemic. You were coming off the back of some really successful releases, and you had a string of kind of high profile DJ gigs, notably at Splash House, Palm Springs, and then at a Cross Festival in San Diego. How did it feel to, one, play those big stages? And then can you talk about whether or not you feel like you're ever going to be back to those big stages?
Yeah, I mean, so I guess around the time Splash House occurred, or when I got booked for that, I was like, holy shit, you know, this is becoming a thing. I feel like I've kind of made it in terms of like being able to successfully pull this off as a career. And obviously I didn't really know what I was getting into. It was my first festival playing something like that. It was an interesting experience, because I think with the US festivals, you're mainly playing with a lot of the EDM crowd, and it was interesting. It's not like my preferred place to play, really, because, you know, the set times are short, the environment's a little strange, but I definitely enjoyed that a lot. I really liked Splash House. And then the gigs I was playing, I guess, for the rest of the year and up until Crossed, which was my last one, I was feeling good about everything. Had, like you said, good momentum going on. I really did not like playing Crossed at all. That was probably my least favorite thing that I've played. But I kind of just took it as like, you know what, maybe this is, you know, good exposure pretty much for me to play. So I did it.
You've kind of been enjoying this success that kind of was born on the internet. And I know a lot of it is surrounding a particular release of yours. And when I was looking you up, doing my research, the most popular track on the internet of yours is Healing, of course, off the Emotional Shift EP. And it's off on Clip Art Records. And I know that you had a bad experience with them, and you mentioned people trying to rip you off. And this is one of those stories that you hear about in the music industry happening. And I was wondering if you could explain a little bit about what goes on behind the scenes in terms of dealing with labels and what your experience was.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, I think, when was that released? I think that was released 2018, right? November 2018. Mm-hmm. And, that was my first, like label release, even with like, I guess, like a contract. I mean, Clip Art's not a major label by any means, or I wouldn't consider them one, especially these days. But at that time, they had a lot of momentum going for them. They had a nice like community movement, they were supporting a lot of small artists and everything. And a lot of the artists that I listened to, look up to, were putting out releases with Clip Art as well. So I remember sending out that EP, whatever, and that was the first time I signed like some contract like this. That was just a crazy contract. Like obviously I should have got a lawyer at the point. I was in school. I didn't have the money for that stuff. And looking back, that's like my biggest regret ever, signing that contract. But, I guess to kind of explain it, it was a bogus contract that when you present it to a lawyer, they're like, why'd you sign this? It's got all this nasty stuff on it that makes literally no sense. And it's deceptively made to be hard to read and understand. Mm-hmm. And I don't even think they really understand their contract for what it's worth. But anyways, where is it going with that?
Well, basically the contract is like so obscure that you can't get any of the money that's owed to you, specifically like royalties from all the streams, the millions of streams, I have to say, on YouTube specifically. There's millions of streams, and people like comment on your track Healing that this is the best lo-fi house track on the internet, rivaling even, you know, the famous Winona by DJ Boring. Yeah. And so there's tons of money, probably. If you had a fair contract, there'd be tons of royalty money from those streams.
And it's not even actually the contract itself that's necessarily screwed me out of money. It's the people behind the label. they actually breached their own contract within the first 6 months of that record being out. They said accounting due every 6 months. I don't think I even got a attempt at them trying to pay me until probably about a year, no, more than a year after. It was December 2019 when I started making a fuss about it online that they were like, oh, you know what? Here, we're going to send you some invoices. And then these invoices were unlike anything I've ever seen.
They the bogus were, invoices.
Yeah, they're three pages. They had all these crazy charges. They all had different amounts on them, too, that made no sense. I mean, crazy amounts of data on them that made no sense. There is all these charges that they're technically charging me for social media PR stuff, mastering that somehow costs them something of $700, which for a three-track EP that wasn't mastered very well is pretty interesting to me that it cost them that much, because I'm well aware of how much that stuff costs, and it's not that much.
Yeah, usually you can get a good track master or a good mastering for like $50, $60.
Yeah, exactly. And if it's like a batch EP, you know, they're just talking around like $150, you know, something like that. So yeah, it was a mess. And then when I tried to reach out to them, it was met with no response. And then I publicly made a statement, and then they made a really, really piss poor and very poorly written response. Posted on social media that was not received well, I think, by many people, including myself. And then to this day, I still haven't been paid. By my own calculations, by the best I can do, obviously, I don't have access to the digital distributor that they use, and they refused to provide me that information. By my accounts, you know, the video has... Just the YouTube video alone has racked up at least, at the very minimum, $6,000 at this point. And that's on the minimum spectrum. This is, we're talking anywhere from $6,000 to $18,000. And then on top of that, everything else, Bandcamp, Spotify, all that data, royalty payments, I haven't received a cent of that.
Well, I'm really sorry to hear that. That's just like the story you never want to hear, especially for a young, burgeoning artist. You've definitely experienced the positives of internet culture and digital culture because your music does exceedingly well on the internet. And specifically, your older tracks, which were, I'd say, pretty strongly into the lo-fi house genre, they do extremely well on the internet. But recently, you've moved away from the lo-fi sound in your most recent releases. There's still elements of it there, but it's evolved. How do you feel about the perception of lo-fi house on the internet versus, you know, in the club?
It's a good question. I think I started making music like around the time that this stuff was kind of coming up, and the whole concept for me, or genre tag, I guess, of lo-fi house has always not really defined one particular sound per se, more like, or I should say one particular genre more so. It more kind of encompasses, it's like a broad spectrum term, in my opinion, right? Because there's elements of like garage, you know, techno, house, acid house, deep house, all that stuff rolled into one. And I think it was more of a like revitalization of like using older sounding gear or hardware back into techno and back into house music, stuff like this. And I think as a lot of the artists who kind of started this around the beginning of this, as we kind of developed their sound throughout the years, and with the, it kind of coincided with being able to, a lot of these people getting, booking more gigs and playing the shows all around the world and everything. And I think this sound, once you're doing that, kind of transitions to wanting to have something that's more club friendly or works better on large sound systems. And that's really kind of what happened with me, I feel like, a little bit. And I could say the same for a lot of artists kind of in this whole genre field too as well.
Definitely. You know, I was thinking of like the careers of Mall Grab or DJ Boring, where they had like the hit that did super well on the internet and had tinges of lo-fi, but now they're touring and the music they make now is different.
Completely different. Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that.
In doing research for this chat, I went on your website and I was surprised to learn that you have an autoimmune disease, so you have to be extra careful with the coronavirus. How are you thinking about that in your future DJing?
I mean, when this whole thing kind of kicked off, my general rule of thumb was that, like, I'm not going to play gigs really until there's a vaccine available. I've been advised by my doctors at Stanford, whatever, to just pretty much do nothing until I can get a vaccine, regardless of whatever travel regulations and such are. But yeah, my plan is basically that, like, I'll continue doing streaming gigs, stuff like that, once there's a vaccine that works and, you know, is not rushed out, hopefully. And then I'll feel comfortable getting back into it. But for my own health, I can't really do that. And it is, even without COVID, it's pretty, it wears me down a lot, flying around, touring, playing gigs like that. So, but I've learned to kind of manage it, I guess, with the career aspect involved.
When you were in school and you were making music, you were, I'm guessing, not 21, but you're still making house music, you know, music that's meant to be played in the clubs on the dance floor. What is that experience like when you can't even DJ or go to the clubs to hear the music that you're trying to produce?
That's a great question. And I think my sound totally started to shift after turning 21 when I look back on it. Because I was making a lot slower stuff before. I had a lot of different things going on at that time too. But I guess the time before turning 21, I was never like, oh yeah, I'm making this for the club. At least often, I guess, you know, I had a fake ID. You know, the only way to do things in SF, if you're in school, is to, you know, get a fake. Right. So, I mean, I was still somewhat involved in the environment, but it definitely wasn't as influencing to me. But yeah, anyway, I've been listening to dance music for most of my life anyways.
Well, thank you for that excellent segue, because we're going to listen to some of that slower music you just mentioned. So this is Distance by Computer Data, released back in 2018. You can check it out on Bandcamp. This track, and I chose it because I wanted to listen to some of your earlier sounds, but I was exploring and this one just didn't sound like any of the other music that you had been making. So I wanted to ask you, at this time you released it in, I believe it was February of 2018, maybe you were making it for a few months before that.
Yeah.
Do you remember what your life was then and what your influences for this track was?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I was originally gonna put it out on my label. It's one of those tracks where I have like, I'm not sure you're aware of this, but I have like maybe, you know, 500 unfinished tracks, stuff like that. It just gets worse as time goes on. But I can't recall the actual process of making this. I'm going to assume I made it around January, maybe December. Let's say January of 2018. And I think I was just kind of starting up the whole I'm going to do a label thing, because within that same kind of time period, I put out All Right shortly after this, I believe. And that was the first track that I noticed started getting a little bit more... attention from it. It was also more deep housey, more lo-fi housey than this was. This is a strange song. It's I'm not really sure like how what I intended with it. It's just one of those really laid back type tracks that I have that I'm surprised I put it out even actually, but I have like hundreds of these that are, some people have heard them, you know, and whatever, a long time ago, or I may have had them public at one point and I've taken them down. But yeah. I do like this one still. It's very, very calm and relaxing. I think with me in that time period, my headspace, or whatever, I was constantly at peak stress levels from school. I mean, up until I was finished, and music for me at that time period was always, in addition to being a coping mechanism for everything in my life, but it was a great stress reliever, and I was making a lot more really slowed down, vibed out stuff, I think kind of because of this.
So Distance is one of your very early tracks, and it kind of is a sound that we don't hear anymore, but now we're going to move into more of your current music. Actually, this is very current. We're going to be talking and listening to a track off the Seal EP, spelled S-E-E-L-E. It's out on Lost Palms, London-based label, released in July 2020. It's a four-track EP with an additional two tracks as digital exclusives. So if you pick it up on Bandcamp, get those extra tracks. You can pick up the vinyl and, like I said, get the digital download on Bandcamp. I wanted to read you some Bandcamp comments because, like a lot of your music, people like to comment and tell you how much they like your music. But there's a few that, there is one in particular that I really thought was a great summation of the release. It's from Sox Avenue. They wrote, "This EP has fantastic depth. I can listen to it in its entirety over and over again. Departure, which is a track, has a lush, punchy club feel. If Goosebumps were a song, Seal would be it. It's gorgeously atmospheric, future classic." Their favorite track is Seal. And fun fact, this person on Bandcamp, I did a little snooping, has only the Ego and Seal EPs on their Bandcamp. So they made a whole Bandcamp account just for you.
Wow. That's so nice. Thank you, Sox Avenue. I hadn't read that one yet. And it's really nice of them.
What I really liked about their comment was they mentioned atmospheric. And I think that is the word I would go to if I had to pick one word to summarize your sound, and that would be it. What do you like so much about pads?
Oh man, I don't know how to, I struggle a lot with putting this into words, which is, you know, why I make music. But there's something with my brain that comes from someplace. Maybe it's like all the 80s music I was exposed to as a child, but I fucking love pads. This warm feeling that's just kind of surrounding you from them. I really, really love that. And it just makes me feel good. It's like a warm blanket for your head. I don't know how to put that in words. I don't know.
Well, I think we can understand that. And I think people understand through the music as well, what you're trying to convey that you can't convey in words. But I bring it up because it's such a constant throughout your music. And there's another constant that I wanted to bring up. But first, I think we should listen to a track off the Seal EP. And first, before we do that, actually, I wanted to ask you, what is the significance of the title of the EP and the title track?
Seal means soul in German. I have to remember that. And sometimes I forget why I titled my EPs the way I titled them all. So, yeah, there's multiple, it's kind of a double meaning, I guess, especially for the title track. I named the EP after the title track because I thought the tracks all are cohesive and they kind of fit the theme that, and again, I don't really know how to express this in words. I feel like I struggle with that. But whatever this soulful embodiment I was aiming for, I thought that represented it. And I don't know, does that make sense? I really do struggle with being able to explain stuff like this, I think. And I guess so on Seal, on the title, I get asked, or I've seen in the YouTube comments and stuff, which I enjoy reading, if it's a reference to Neon Genesis Evangelion. Which is, has an organization named Seal in it. And I want to say I wrote this track around the time that I first went through and watched that series. And if you haven't seen that, it's very... it's deep, it's layered.
Existential, for sure.
Yeah, very existential. And I did take inspiration from that in I think the writing of this track, but it also had more more personal meaning to me as well, which I associated with the word.
Well, we're going to take a listen to that track now. We're going to listen to Seal off of the Seal EP, which is out now on Lost Palms. You can buy it on Bandcamp. Looks like there's still some vinyl copies available. Beautiful blue marbled vinyl. Get it while it lasts. I can see you vibing out to the track. Do you usually vibe out to your own music like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've said this before, but I've always made music for myself. So I love listening to a lot of it. Yeah, I do listen to it a lot.
You got to love your own music.
Yeah.
I really wanted to listen to this track because it has a lot of the elements that we talked about in terms of pads. But there's also a lot of more minimal elements in the section that we listened to. There's even some jungle sounding breaks. What were the ideas or things happening in your life that influenced this EP or this track specifically?
Let's see. I have to, again, kind of go into a time capsule in my brain.
Were you listening to more jungle type beats or?
This was 2019. Yes. I think when I wrote Seal, let's see. So last summer when I wrote this track, I had, I think I'd made this just a couple weeks after, playing my first time down in LA. That's kind of when I was starting to work on
this. Was that a Chewing alongside photo gallery?
Yeah. Yeah. It was with No Format. And I was just like, I was feeling good about life at that point. I was finally meeting people that were like in the music industry that were like, they were cool. And they were like people I looked up to before that I'd only like, been listening to on Spotify for years and stuff. I was just feeling really good about life. I was done with school. I was done with school. Man, it's been a long year.
It really has, though.
It's almost hard for me to look back because it's been over a year since I made this.
So you mentioned that you were originally going to have this out on your own label, but it was then that Shall Not Fade approached you. They answered like an email that you sent them like a long time ago.
Yeah, you've done your research. Kieran, the guy who runs Shall Not Fade, he replied to a demo email I had sent them in 2018, and it was a demo for the Emotional Shift EP, the one with Healing on it. And I mean, I'm mad he didn't reply to it back in in 2018, whatever. But he was like, "Hey, is it still available?" And I'm like, "No, it's not available." But he was like, "Send me whatever you have now." I remember sending him a playlist, thinking like, "Oh, he's probably only gonna like 2 or 3 of these tracks at most. So I'll just put like 20 of all these tracks that I have no idea what to do for." So it was like a playlist, like 20 tracks or something. And he just replies and he's like, "I like it. Let's take them all." I was like, "Holy shit." So from there, we kind of built the EP out of the 3 EPs out of that. And A Seal was one of them.
I think it was always exciting when you get that confirmation from someone that you, especially a label like Shall Not Fade and their sub-label Lost Palms, they've been putting out a lot of good music, and you must have felt excited to get that response and have a label like Shall Not Fade be interested in your music, right?
I was so stoked. I remember telling all my friends and everything, because I'd been listening to Shall Not Fade since 2015, since they first popped up, because they've had some of the, you know, lo-fi house classic dudes on there since the very start, and they've just had really consistent output, and Kieran's been doing great things with the label.
Well, I want to talk more about the track itself, about Seal. So in the section that we listen to, there's a bit of like a jungly break happening before the quote-unquote drop, but right before the drop there's this vocal sample that triggers. And just like the pads that we mentioned, vocal samples or vocal chops are another key element of your style, I guess, or your sonic signature. What's so appealing to you about vocals in your tracks?
Well, for the most part, I wish I had more of them to work with, and I wish more I could fit in, or I had vocalists that I knew I could work with. But for me, it's always been... I like listening to house music vinyl with vocals. It's kind of like on this track, it's kind of a callback to that track that I have, Aulis. The vocals are a little bit similar fashion to that, with the short little vocal sample. And to me, this track is like kind of like Aulis 2.0 in the way that it kind of feels to me, at least. And yeah, I just like them. They're fun. Sounds good. And yeah,
do you think that it's not so much about what the vocals are saying, like the words that are being spoken, but you think it's like the intonation that appeals to you more?
Yeah, like I it's more of like an instrument per se, right? It's not whatever necessarily they're saying, because 99% of the time in vocals with a lot of my tracks, they're kind of well, except for maybe Healing, although most people don't really know what's going on in Healing besides Healing. a lot of it's just like chopped up stuff that I'm like, "Oh, this sounds nice." It's just like the melodic structure, and I'd say the harmonic quality of it, rather than the necessarily the phrasing or wording of it per se in my sample usage.
Right. So on this, by the time you're making the tracks for the Seal EP, you've accrued some more gear. You got some more toys to play with. What were some of the things that were you using?
So I had the TR-8. I think I used the TR-8 for... I think I resampled the TR-8, which is the Roland drum machine. I think I had just gotten the Analog Rhythm in March of that year. So I was using that a bunch of resampled stuff from my TR-8 and inboard synthesis, whatever. The pads, I had the DeepMind, which I had been doing for a long time at that point. What's in there? Let me play this again. 1 second. Yeah. That track has, you know, baseline, I think, was synthesized just from the, what time was that? SH-101 VST, the Roland Cloud, because I didn't have the MS-1 yet. I don't think that was out yet. I had the Digitone, and I don't remember if that's used in this track. Maybe later in the track? I'm not sure. But from the start, I'd say I used the Analog Rhythm, DeepMind, some VSTs. That's about it. It's really not too overly complicated with the amount of tracks that are in it.
How hard is it to use the Octatrack?
Oh man, the Octatrack. So I've had the Octatrack since I think June or July is when I got it, maybe earlier. And I personally would not say I'm anywhere close to have been like I've mastered it, and I have tons of experience. Like I fully mastered the rhythm by the time I got an Octatrack. Totally fully mastered, well, not fully mastered maybe, but very comfortable with the Electron Digitone as well. All of their UIs, their workflows, whatever, I'm very comfortable with it. I buy the Octatrack, I'm like, holy shit, it's kind of like starting over from step one. It's such a complex machine. The UI is so complex. I actually went as far as printing the user manual out. I got it printed and bound and everything, just so I could read it whenever I wanted, not on a phone or whatever.
Yeah, just so everybody, you know, they can't see what I'm seeing, but it's literally like a full page print out with a laminated cover and ring binding. Yeah. That's impressive. That's dedication.
Thank you. Yeah.
So now let's jump to the Ego EP. This is the third EP out with Shall Not Fade on the Lost Palm sublabel. It was released September 2020. It follows the first release, which we didn't listen to, but the first release was called Bomb. And then we just listened to the Seal EP, which was the second EP that you released with Lost Palms. The Ego EP, it's a 6-track EP. You can get all the tracks on Bandcamp as well as the vinyl. Make sure to head over to Bandcamp. Support the label, support the artist. And we're going to get into one of the tracks we're going to listen to, my favorite off this release, which is M-Type. Stop before I listen to the whole track. Okay, so hopefully by now everybody that's listening, you understand what I'm talking about when I keep mentioning the progression of Computer Data's music, because this is not Distance, this is not Healing, this is some hot club ready music. And honestly, I'm really bummed that it's 2020 and we can't hear this in the club on a nice sound system. But when we do get the chance, it's going to sound amazing, partly because in the section we listened to, there's the third element that I would say makes up your sound, and that is the bass. The bass has like this really rich, subby texture, and it appears on a lot of your tracks. Kind of reminds me of like the way Disclosure used to really have the bass at the center of their tracks, and it was really a driving but also melodic force. And then you combine all the other elements, like the higher tempo, the more I would say frantic percussion, and the synth lines are also more aggressive. When you're putting this EP together, working with the label, were you very focused on making this a dance floor EP?
Yes. And I'm so disappointed because the timing of this release, we had figured out the timing of the releases in the beginning of the year for everything. And this one, I put this out and this was going to be like the last one. And this is like a way more club focused EP. And I was expecting around this time, you know, to be touring around, getting to play this out. That was definitely its original intention, so to say. But yeah, it's just not going to happen for a while, I guess.
It's a real bummer that 2020 happened, of course. But the upside is that the music is out there now. You guys can get it on Bandcamp. You can get the vinyl. You can get the download. M-Type is also a long track. It's 8 minutes and 44 seconds, and that's not unusual for e-music, actually. A lot of house tracks house releases I see, they hover around like the 5 minute, 6 minute mark. What is it about making an 8 minute track? Is it just because you had so many ideas you wanted to put into one track, or is it that you think the longer play length is important?
It's not necessarily that I think the longer play length is important, although I do really like that for my own use when I DJ, just because I like long blends and stuff like that. A lot to work with in a track. But a lot of the way how I write music is like in a live performance type setting, if that makes sense. And most of it's like I'm doing all the arrangement kind of live. It's just, I'm grooving like the whole time I'm making it, and I lose track of time. I lose the sense of time. A lot of times I'll have something like I've recorded like a 25 minute long song before. And this is just one of those ones where I was just feeling it, and I just let it run for the length of the chorus. And it has a bunch of different elements in it that I think I was able to fit in. I think if I make songs that are, you know, too long, especially with stuff like this, like if I hit over the 9 minute mark, then I could keep going, but it's too long at that point, because I always want to expand on ideas. I think take tracks different places, kind of bring the energy.
At that point, it's turning into a live set almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wanted to ask you about one of the synth sounds in particular. It's we heard it in the section that we listened to, and it's almost like this pinging, I want to say golf ball bell sound, but bell is probably a better way to describe it. When you are making or sculpting the sounds that you want to incorporate in your track, do you often start from presets and then you work your way down to the sound that you want?
So a lot of times I'll be working on a patch for some, just for my own entertainment or later use. A lot of times I'll start my day or whatever, just kind of sound designing. And by the time that I'm done with that or whatever, it's nighttime and I'm like, I'm going to write some music or something. I think from that one, I was heavily influenced by, I must've been listening to that Mall Grab record, off How the Dogs Chill or whatever. That last Liverpool in the Street Rain, I think that's one where it goes doo doo doo. Yeah. He's always had really nice bell type sounds in his tracks, and I've always admired that. And I think I was messing around DeepMind, I came up with this nice little bell type patch. I was like, oh, I kind of like this, made a little melody, and then it kind of went from there, I guess.
With all the sound design that you're doing, could we maybe expect a computer data sample pack in the future?
Absolutely. I've recorded and processed a bunch of samples from mostly drum samples so far, but from various machines that are ready to go. I just would like to record a lot more synth stuff, a lot more melodic stuff for the sample pack as well. But that is definitely coming.
I'm going to ask you to pick one. You can only pick one. I know it's going to be a tough choice. Chorus or delay?
Ooh. I'm going to go with delay, because you can kind of make like a chorus out of with using a delay.
So a practical response.
Yeah.
I got one more for you. Compression or reverb?
Oof, reverb. I love reverb. Soak that shit in reverb all day.
Really, reverb? I was sure that you were going to pick compression.
Like you'd think, but I feel like I could get away with no compression. If I was stranded on a desert island, whatever, somehow I had synths or something, and at least a mixer, an amplifier source, and you're like, reverb or compressor? I'd take the reverb. Just got to make stuff sound really nice and wet.
No, nobody better clip that.
Yeah.
Well, Computer Data, it was great talking to you. I look forward to all your new releases. And before we sign off, what do you have going on in your life coming up? I heard that you might have a full length planned.
Yeah, I've been working on a full length LP for the last, several months, I guess. I'm still kind of in the middle of it, towards the tail end. It won't be out this year, but likely in the beginning of next year, I'll have that out and ready to go.
Is that going to be out on Shall Not Fade?
Yes.
Confirmed new Computer Data released, everyone. Going to be out on Shall Not Fade. Keep your eyes peeled for it. If you want to know more about Computer Data, make sure to check out his socials. You can find him on Instagram and Twitter. All that will be linked below in the episode description. Thank you again to Computer Data for sitting down for this chat with us. Really appreciate your time and best of luck with everything going forward.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, man. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. You've been listening to the Back-to-Back Podcast from Fault Radio. I'm Brennan Coe. Catch you next time. Hey everyone, thank you so much for listening. If you like this episode, make sure to follow Fault Radio at faultradio.com or on Instagram at @its_fault_radio to stay up to date on all the things we're doing. You can also check out our YouTube channel. We're also on Twitch and Twitter. And if you want to support Fault Radio in another way, consider joining our Patreon for just the price of a cup of coffee a month. You can help support us in doing projects like the Back-to-Back Podcast and much more. Thank you so much again for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.